Hello, everyone. Thank you for being here. We're going to start our panel for today, People on the Move. My name is Yasura. I am from the content crew, and I will be moderating the session. People on the Move, a term being coined daily by millions of individual stories, which are brutally crushed into a tight understanding of a large number of individuals as one group, as one solution fits all. But in a lot of cases, this solution is deadly. It's systematic and growing every day. To shed the light on that, on a more zoomed in perspective, we're happy to have Nahid, Hela, and Jihad on the stage, who come here from different places to tell stories from the pan-European experience of migration. So I would like to start with an introduction round. Would you like to introduce yourself and tell us where are you coming from and in which area are you active and what brought you here to the content today? Nahid, would you like to start?
Yeah. So first of all, hello to all of you. Thanks for all of you for giving your time to be here. I'm Nahid Akpari from Afghanistan, a human rights activist. Actually, I started to become an activist in Greece, where the situation was really hard for all of us and where I couldn't accept the condition. Where the place that we were deprived of so many rights, for example, the right of going to school, the rights of move, and living in the camps for a long time. So I started to become active and work with the organization which was made it by migration, and we were giving some classes to the children as we didn't have the opportunity to be in the local school. And I was teaching to the small children. And I also, I write some stories emotionally about the ways that I have been through. I write some poems, and also I try to paint some things to, in order to share my feelings, like the borders that I have passed, and I try to share them with people. Because as I was on the place where I really want people to hear me, because we were in the situation that so many people didn't know the way that we were going through or what was happening really to us. So I decided to share things by myself and share my emotions. And what brought me here was to tell you and about the things that are happening. And
thank you, Nahid. Can you tell us, as a follow-up, where are you staying now, and what is the route of your journey until you came here?
So it took me to pass 10 countries to arrive to Germany, and all this way by Balkan routes. And actually, they were telling me a person without document, an illegal person. So we take so many hardships to arrive here after passing 10 countries. And now I'm staying in Riesa in Germany.
Thank you. Hela, would you like also to introduce yourself and tell us where are you active in and your journey to come here?
I'm Hela, and I'm part of the Alarm Phone Network, but not the Alarm Phone Sahara, but the other one, the Watch the Med Alarm Phone. That's where I'm mainly active in. I focus on the Central Mediterranean because I'm Tunisian, based in Tunis, and I don't consider myself as a person on the move yet. So in the Central Mediterranean, we receive the distress calls, and we document the violations. we denounce them, and we also do research and follow-up work on people which are missing because of the violent borders. I'm also active in Tunisia itself as trying to support people which are mainly coming from Libya by land, or people who have been pushed back to Tunisia, who have departed from Libya, for example. Yeah, this is what I do.
Thank you. And our third dear guest for today, Jihad, would you like also to introduce yourself?
Salam, everyone. Salam is a word that I love so much. So I'm Jihad. I'm Tunisian, pronoun he, him. I learned it in Europe to introduce myself, my pronoun. And I used to be an ex-cyber activist during the Tunisian Revolution. This is my background. I was politically active during the revolution. Then we had the people who flee the war in Libya. Then I discovered 2011, which mean like refugees and campaign and like come. Then I joined Alarm Fund, and I served a project like the Louise Michel rescue ship, then some project where we do documentation of externalization of European border regime in North Africa and in West Africa. I'm also with Hela in the working group in Central Med, where we do Alarm Fund work, we do follow-up and research with the family who's searching for missing people, missing relatives, missing stories at these European borders. And also, I'm apart from the, some self-organized collective who's supporting people who cross from Italy to Briançon, France, and support people who also in detention centers. Most of people are there are Tunisian. And yes, this is globally what the field I'm involved in. And also, I came from Tunis, and I exist in Milano, in Italy. My paper are there, but now I live in Marseille. And yesterday, I get the answer that I didn't get the permit to be legal in France, so I will stay to try to apply to be legally accepted in France. So that's it.
Thank you, Jihad. To follow up on your introduction, so you are sitting on one coast of the Mediterranean and Hela is sitting on the other coast in Tunisia. Is there any coordination between the two sides, or what is the infrastructure that connects you as self-organized groups? Is there a connection?
I mean, the connection exists first because we are like from same active collective, and we are in the same working group in Alarm Fund. But also, there is a lot of work when we work with people who get deported or people who get missing at border, where we seek information from Tunisian side, because the information the families don't have access to get information about their relative, and we have access kind to detention center. So it's like work between people who are in Europe to try to get the information, because the information most of time are missing. So, and also to get the connection to Tunisia, because families don't have this privilege to access, or most of time when they call the detention center, they don't get answered. So it's like a bridge in research. But also when we have people who get deported, people who are in Tunis, people who are in the field, get contacted to people who are victim of deportation in Tunisia. So it's in two sides.
Okay. Hela, would you like to say something about this connection, or?
I think Jihad.
Do you agree with?
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Okay. I will go back to Nahid and ask you, through your journey, through what you are doing now, what do you think the impact, because what you are saying is a very individual story. It's a story of one person against the whole machinery of borders and Frontex and all this mighty structure coming from the EU, also regulated by the EU. What do you think the impact of this is on your life as an individual, and especially, let's say, impacting the woman on the move that you see and that you meet on the way.
Yeah. So actually, personally, before coming to Europe, I had a really nice image of being in Europe. Like, as a girl, what I thought of being Europe was I will be in the place where I will be protected, where I will be get the right to be educated, where I can move freely, where I can speak freely, and get the rights that I didn't have in my own country. But after passing through some ways and borders, I understand that it depends if you are a refugee or not. So if you are a refugee, then the things doesn't work the same. Then getting safety is a crime for you and you are a illegal person. And for women and girls, it was always harder to be on the move. They had to take a really hard pressure on themselves. And most of them stop fighting and accept the condition that they don't deserve. Because sometimes there is no one to listen to us, to hear us. And this is what is impacting them a lot. So when they have no one to speak about their problems, where there is no one to speak about their pains, and when the things doesn't change, then it's impacting them a lot, and they stop, and they accept the condition. And for me, it was the same. I always say that it's really painful for young people, young refugees like me. What we all have from our childhood is pain. Like, as always, people are asking us, why do you speak more than your age? Like, the answer is clear. We are passing from so many borders. We are judged as the danger refugees. Passing the borders are crime for us, and getting safety is really hard for us. These are the things that is really impacting us a lot.
And can you tell us, as a first-hand experience, on the role of the supporting, of the helping groups that are, as the other guests, Jihad and Hela, like, are as independent and self-organized groups? Do you have contact with them? Can you describe, like, what the role of them in that journey is?
Yeah, so actually the first place that I arrived in Europe was Greece. The refugee camp that was made it for at least 2,000 people, but more than 6,000 people were living in a really inhuman condition, where we couldn't, where we had to live for years in the refugees camp. And as I said before, that we were deprived of so many rights. And in there, I meet some group of other girls, and we were thinking to make some self-organizing. As I said, I was working with the group who was teaching to the children. And because we didn't have any supports from outside, so we wanted to build something inside our camp. So we thought to make some classes and to do self-learning. And then we started to, as we thought, we can maybe support women in a way, because it's really hard for them to live in the refugees camp. And then we started to have some activities with the girls, and we all organized all of them by ourselves. Actually, we didn't know anyone from outside, so everything that we start was from social media. So we were sharing everything, our daily life on the social media in order to get some supports from outside of the camp that we were living. And then when we started to know some people, then we started to open some arts or paintings project where refugees could paint their words that they want to share on a piece of art. And this was what we were doing, actually.
Thank you, Nahid, very much. I want to go to you, Hela. When you hear this story and you are sitting on the other hand of the helping organization of the group, do you agree with what Nahid said? Like, is it how the situation is, or what is you are trying to put there and it's coming shorter or coming the same?
I mean, of course, it is true what Nahid is saying. And like organizations like Alarmfon, Sea Rescue, it's an emergency solution. It's a huge work, but that will not end the violence. So I see us as just, because now the situation is so bad that some people decide to self-organize and to support the people, but it cannot be a solution on the long term, and it should not be a solution on the long term, and we shouldn't even exist, actually. There's millions and millions of situations, as you said in the beginning, that we are not a homogenic group, and the state is doing, the EU is doing a huge work in criminalizing every single person moving and every single person supporting people on the move. And I guess this answers a bit your question.
And Jihad, to you.
Yeah, I definitely agree with both. And there is a lot of solidarity, but also this network for me is like resistance. And I love this quote to say, fight with tools. And we have so much limited tools, so much limited resources. But as Hela mentioned, it's short terms, and we cannot do so much with this. But what I want to mention also, that there is a lot of self-organized collective, non-European collective, who are active in Europe. And for example, for people who was wondering how people arrive on Lampedusa, disembark in Lampedusa, then they found themselves in Paris or in Germany. There is a lot of huge self-organized groups who don't call them activists, but they are kind of solidarity networks. For example, if you go to Lampedusa or, for example, Palermo, some Tunisian know that if you go to this place, you will have, for example, new clothes, because if you have new clothes, police will not interrupt you. If you go to this place, I don't know, in Milano, you know that because you will need money, you need Western Union, and without ID, you don't get Western Union, but some people can give you this. And when you go, for example, to Glavier in winter, because in this zone between France and Italy, if you are a tourist, you can cross, because it's so expensive place for people who do snowboards and snow games and this. So there is some people who can give you this snowboard, and you can change your clothes from someone who's crossing to someone who's crossing to enjoy the snow. There is a lot of genius idea there, doing by people with so limited capacity, self-organized. They don't do a lot of fundraising, but there is a huge work. And with someone who can support you by paying your Flixbus ticket, it's for some people it's not so much thing, but for someone it's this ticket can save you from getting deported from Italy to Tunisia or Italy to Algeria. So just to mention this.
Yeah, I'm totally agree with what you said. Actually, when I was also on the move, the organization that was there was helping us a lot. For example, where we were pushbacks, and then we were without nothing, without any food, without any clean clothes. And this organization actually are helping a lot people on the move. They are giving new clothes to us, and they are helping us in a really good ways. And I mean, the organizations are really a big help for people on the move.
So do you think there should be more organizations helping, or are these the same but they need to be expanded? How do you think it can be better, because we're not able to fight the original system, we're not able to, as Hela said, we shouldn't exist in the first place as these groups, but now it is a de facto situation, this is reality and we need to deal with it. What would be your imagination? Do we need more, or is it?
I think it's really nice that this organization are working, because the place that we were, for example, in Bosnia, if you are out of the camp, then IOM, for example, they don't help you at all if you are on the border and if you are staying in the tents. So they don't give you any supports or anything. So the only people who are helping us in that situation are these organizations, because they bring us these tents that we can stay, they bring us sleeping bags where that we can go the way that we want. So I think the organizations are doing a really important things for us. Because if you're out of the camps, then you get no support. If you don't have money, then there is not any food for you. There is not anything for you. So I think the organizations are doing an important
job. Thank you. Hela, you wanted to say?
Yeah, I just wanted to say something about self-organized movements, which I think are the most important thing, because if we see the protest of the refugees in Libya or the protest of the refugees in Tunisia, they have made their voice on their own and they have done all the work on their own, and it's no one went to Libya to support them, but they made it all by their own. And so I think these are the self-organized movements are the ones that should be encouraged, or I don't know what the English word, supported. But also it is the people on the move, because for me, in Alarmfon, when a person calls you from a detention center in Libya, gives their testimony, tells you to publish it, it's their choice. They wanted to have that, and we as Alarmfon or any other organization, the testimonies we're collecting or the things that we are denouncing wouldn't be there without the huge, by the huge courage of the people on the move who are willing to denounce the situation themselves. And I think it's actually, I would like to see that there is more support to these self-organized movements, which no one hears about, which they are almost inexistent in the big media, the big social media. So, yeah.
I want to tackle a new subject now that has a geographic background. You've made your journey and move from different places now, and now we're sitting in the heart of the European Union, in Germany, which has no borders to outside of Europe and thus doesn't have the problem of crossing borders theoretically. But at the same time, Germany is one of the biggest supporters of and creators of Frontex, and leading the EU in that. And when you are sitting here and you, I don't know if you have seen the signs in Fusion, for example, in this festival, and they say refugees welcome and sea rescue is not a crime. What do you feel when you see that? What ideas get into your head when you see this, and then you have seen the other end, the Frontex and the borders of the EU, which is how's it called in English, like Festung Europa or the Fortress of Europe. I would like to start with Jihad.
I really didn't think about this question. It was, but I mean, for me, borders still existing for me in Europe. Like, I feel like I'm in Europe, but there is a lot of borders inside. I mean, yes, I like abolish Frontex. I like see rescue is not a crime. I really like it, and it gave me some hope. Like, there will be change. But there is a quote from Gramsci. I like it so much. Who say like, now we are seeing the end of the world, but the new one is not yet born, and we are living with the demons. I don't know, I translate to Italian, and my Italian is not so good. So,
it's a very dystopian description of what.
So, this is my situation here in Europe. You feel like everywhere there is hidden borders, hidden border regime, and I think there is a lot of work to do with this. I mean, for example, I have kind of what we call like for I can access to hospitals in Italy without paying anything, and the same card
insurance,
yeah, same the health insurance. But when you go to French hospital, you cannot access with this, and this is like unbelievable because it's written European Union, and they told me, but you are not Italian, you are Tunisian. And for me, okay, but I have this card. So no, they get no. And for me, this was like, okay, there is this nice thing, like, yes, abolish Frontex, what? And I don't want to be in this radical position and pessimist position, but there is some hope. But I accepted also our limits, because if you see this bubble, we have such limited capacities, but we did such a lot of nice work with those such limited capacities. So,
thank you. Hela, what do you think when you see the signs, when you are in the heart of Europe?
To be honest, I have a problem with the refugees' welcome. Because for me, I see it as a repetition of the same narrative of the state, as if the refugees are welcome, but the economic migrants are not. We are against the state, but many times we repeat the same narrative. Like, yes, we have super limited capacities, and many people are out of their capacities. But again, I don't think we should continue in this way, and should maybe also at some point stop and think again, like, what is going wrong? Because since I have joined the Alarm Phone, I don't see less violence, I see more violence. Alarm Phone has started because of a shipwreck there was a non-assistance at sea for 5 hours, but now we have non-assistance for 24 hours. So with years, the violence is getting bigger and not getting less. So also we should question ourselves what should be the solution. Which is also the same with sea rescue is not a crime, because sea rescue, yes, is not a crime, but migration is also not a crime, and that should be a big slogan. And also, I think, there is a lot of focus. There is a lot of focus on criminalized white people, which, in the end, have access to lawyers, have access to money, to fundraising. We are starting to finally also speak about the criminalization of boat drivers who are arriving to Italy, but we are still forgetting that actually in Africa itself, because as in the last panel, about borders externalization, we have laws that are imposed by the EU that are criminalizing people who are in solidarity with people on the move, criminalizing entry, criminalizing exit, criminalizing everything that you wanna do, and every form of resistance to this border.
And do you feel a difference? Yes. I just wanna go in detail on this, because each year, it was said in the previous talk that each year the laws and the agreement of Frontex is updated, and then you get new laws, and that has impact on people and organizations. And do you think this, do you feel when you hear an announcement that now Frontex has changed, then you see more violence? Do you have kind of pick points of that, or it's happening gradually, and then you notice only every 3 months that the number is growing?
Because also of limited capacities, we've never thought about having this. But violence is constant and is growing, and continuing, it's not stopping. And violence is not just at the sea, but also when I want to go to an island to have vacation with my friends in Tunisia, I am stopped and brought back to the mainland, because that island is actually a very important departure point. And that's how the violence can go to, that's how far it can go to.
Thank you, Hela. Nahid, would you like to tell us your perspective? You have arrived here to Fusion Festival, and you have seen, you have experienced some things. Tell us.
Yeah. So actually, I have seen some banners written, refugees are welcome, or no borders, for example, or no refugees is a crime or illegal. When I see them, it's like, when I was in that situation, I really lost my hopes, and I really wanted to someone to tell me this word, which could give me a hope or something. But now as I'm here and I'm seeing these things, it's giving me also a good feeling, but I'm still thinking that there are still people that want to hear this, but they don't. So for me, it would be instead like, I don't know how to explain it. It's like something emotionally, personally, but yeah.
So let's say it more. Refugees are? Oh, thank you. Thank you. Okay. Let's say, staying at the point of, well, this we have our mottos here, we have our labels that are raised, and we have the bad situation that is happening on the borders. How do you describe this in terms of, is it the right kind of work? Is it hypocrisy? Is it as you said, like repeating the same narrative, repeating the narrative of the system itself? And what would be your advice to people who are on the other side, like doing activism from here, but for people on the move, on the borders, which this distance is kind of bridged between the places through the internet now, let's say, but logistically it's still sitting far away. Jihad?
I think I didn't get very well the question.
Yes, I formulated it very, very complicated. I'm sorry. So, to put it easily, how do you see European activists? Are they hardworking activists or hypocrites that are repeating the narrative of the regime, or maybe something else? I don't want to like put only the two options. What's your vision of the activists here?
I mean, I cannot homogenize. I cannot make a stereotype of European activism, because there is a lot of comrades, a lot of friends, and like sister and brothers. You know, it's important in our culture to see sister and brothers. And so, but also there is a lot of things to do. There is a lot of work to improve, and a lot of critics to accept. And yes, for me, there is, I mean, maybe I'm lucky, I'm privileged to have those networks who are supporting me, and I'm always feel safe with them. It's important. And I mean, always the question for me was how I feel while you are moving in a world, like in European, these standards, and you feel like this European Union's country are designed to limit and exclude you. This is what I feel. And in this fortress of Europe, you found a lot of support from this networks, and a lot of also people who accept and tolerate, gave you space to say this criticism. For example, if you raise your concerns about white saviorism, about this how, for example, the media work is working in our networks, you have some space, but other like organization or other network are kind of conservative, and they exclude completely people on the move from their work, and they are always those experts who go, for example, to Tunisia, spend 3 months in fancy hotels, and then they become the expert of the region, and they come to you to explain. For example, recently someone wanted to explain to me how police work in Tunisia. I was 13 years there, and I still don't understand how police work in Tunisia. How in 3 months after you learn some salam, shukran, you explain to me how police works. And those people become the expert, and they take the place of people on the move. And for example, usually me, Nahid, Hela are not the people who will speak. They will speak and we'll be watching them speaking about us, telling our story by their eye, not with our eye. So this is what I really sometimes I would like to raise concern about those expat, or I don't know who, telling our stories in their words by their privilege, by their stories, and also by their wording, because wording is so important. When you see those experts who speak, for example, about this migration crisis, and they use always this crisis, I don't describe migration as a crisis. Because if you say crisis mean like you erase a lot of stories. So for all of them, those experts, there is only one African story. Like one African story, and this all like Africans like this, or people from Afghanistan or Iran are the same. And they erase the complicity of the things by this expert. So this is, I really sometimes it makes me like sick just watching people who become those experts. And yeah.
Actually, he pointed on something important. It's like, it's true that each person has a different story and each person want to share their stories and the things that happened to them. And I also think that it's really important to that the person that had like to speak about their story by their own. And the organizations, they are doing actually good job, but I think it's also important that people tell their own stories by themselves, by them personally.
Thank you. Hello?
I wouldn't call it hypocrite or anything from that sense. I would just would really love to see it as a discussion and to really discuss the work that we are doing and how we are doing it, because as I said earlier, like otherwise we will just stick to this and to repeating the same things that the state is also doing, all the UN agencies are doing, and from media work to how we communicate with the people, how we treat the cases that we have. So I wouldn't call it hypocrite, but would call it it's nice to reflect, because for example, if I see the Central Med is where I almost have I have some knowledge about it, but always like from a lot of sea rescue NGOs calling the Libyan hell, while people have never been in Libya, they don't know what Libya is, and they portray it as this very non-safe country, horrible people living there, making again the same mistake of it's a homogenic group, while Libya is divided in three itself. So in this sense, they are also repeating the same, and Europe is the safe place. So this is repeating the same white savior coming to an African country, saving us from the misery and hell, and repeating the same colonial narrative that we are dealing with on a daily basis.
Yeah, sometimes we forget that the real reason for everything that is happening comes also from here, be it wars, kind of not here in Germany, I don't want to demonize the whole thing, but kind of climate change, we talk a lot about it, and it's also pushing a lot of people to be on the move, and they want to move to the place where it's now, Europe, the safest place, the safest haven to come and live, but we are faced again and again with realities that do not match this this condition or this definition of the place. So in that sense, there is a kind of a separation, and I would go to call it a kind of a hidden apartheid system between people who are living in the EU and people who are coming newly to it. Because I would like to ask you, as Well, it's to Jihad and Nahid the question. What is your experience with the local people? When you come to a new country, you've been to like 10 borders, and how did you see, did you come into contact with people? Was there like daily living, or was it only dealing with the departments, with the police, with the different authorities, or was it people more?
Actually, it was really hard for us to be like with the local people, because I was getting to believe that we are different because of the way that I was treated, the ways that the people were behaving to me, because I can understand like what they knew from us was something different. Like as they hear things from the news or in TV, or they see a newspaper, is something different. Like how they explain us on the news or these things are really different from what we are. So it was always hard for me to be in the local people. I always had a feeling that maybe I am a different person. Well, I wasn't different. I remember that in some country I couldn't use the transportation. For example, in Bosnia, when we were pushed back from Croatia and we had to walk 20 kilometers back to the place we were, because we were refugees and we couldn't use the transportation. And I remember that we couldn't go to some restaurants or to some shops even, because of what they knew about refugees. So it was always hard for us to be in the local people, and we were actually scared to communicate with them, because we were scared to be judged of something that we aren't. So that's made hard for us to be in communicate with local people. So that's why we were always far from the local people. We were staying in refugees camp all the time, and yeah.
Did you have like, were you afraid that when you talk to someone they will tell the authorities, or they will tell on you and that you will be exposed, let's say? Or did that happen, that if you talk to locals then they would call the police and tell them refugees are here and they will come for you? Were you afraid of that? Did you have any fear of that, or did it happen in front of you in any case?
Yeah, of course it's happened a lot for so many people. For example, when we were walking in some places where they had some parties or something, when we were walking there, and then they were telling us you are not allowed to enter this place or to go there because it's not for you. And it's happened a lot, and we were always afraid of this, of course, because when we are asking for asylum, and we are always scared that our asylum procedure gets rejected, because if they call to the police, then we are scared maybe something bad is happening to our asylum procedure. So we always stay quiet. And I remember that when I was in Greece, we wanted to do a protest because of the situation that we were. And I heard that in Europe, doing protest and asking for your rights is legal and you can freely ask. But when we just started to write the banners and we were start to going in the city, then everyone was calling to the police that this big group of refugees are here, and then yeah, we were pushbacks and they stopped us, so we couldn't do this protest. And it's also happened in Bosnia. The thing is that they don't want us to... It has been always a risk to talk about the realities that are happening. So...
Thank you. And Jihad, my friend, would you like to tell us your reflection on that?
Maybe I would put big eye in these stories, because maybe it's also if to share those stories. I mean, I lived in Italy and Germany and France. I mean, yeah. In Italy, I was in the, the right-wing part of Salvini. So if you go outside of my place, you will see first things, refugees are not welcome. Liga Nord, a lot of picture of Salvini. And I was like, okay, it's, the price is not so, I can afford this rent. It wasn't like so much. So I didn't have the choice to say, okay, this is not a nice place. I have to stay there. I need a residence. I need an address. And this is for paper. So first 2 days, there was two control from the police because two neighbors called the police and they say there is someone like me, like Arabic, African, so North African, Arabic, so the stereotype of criminal there. So the police come twice to check me and see if I'm there and they like, I have a rent, I'm legal, blah, blah. And I was very shocked by their like attitude. Then they start always, like my neighbors always are shocked to see me. Like you go outside and they feel always this, like what are you doing here? Like after 2 years, during Corona, they always like you meet them and they are shocked, like surprised, what are you doing here? So this is in Italy and always in the control. For example, when we are traveling, like for some meetings or for our networks, we have our devices. I'm traveling always my devices and my phones when there is a lot of alarm phone shifts. I never thought about security or cybersecurity. I'm like, I do a lot of crypto things, but police never controlled me about this. They always control me if I have drugs, if I'm smuggling cigarettes. I have to wait sometimes because they don't understand what are my papers. They always don't understand. I don't know why. They have to check and call and they call and they call again. And even with like they used everything. For example, I was kicked off from Charles de Gaulle Airport. I was traveling and I have like my full vaccination in paper. But also my phone their phone to control the QR code didn't work. So, but I have the other QR code in the phone and I called the pharmacy that where I did the vaccination and the officer just refused to check just the paper. He said, no, your QR code, this is a fake vaccination, and they call the police, and you get outside, and they control, and they discover it's not fake, it's real, that they call the pharmacy, and just you find yourself kicked off. Whereas, like, some people, I think they have, like, fake vaccination certification, and they never get controlled. And also in France, there is a lot of racism there in the community. So for example, I am in Marseille where there is a lot of Arabic community. And for me, first coffee there, they told me, don't go where there is the white people, they are so racist. And really, there is a level, like a lot of racism there in France. I really was shocked in these 4 months or 5 months. I mean, police always control us. They always, if you are not selling hashish or something, you are selling cigarettes. If you are not selling cigarettes, you stole something. There is a lot of controls just because like this stereotype of Arabic stereotype. And they, like for me, it's okay if I get controlled 2-3 times in the day just because they control the ID. And I tolerate this, I accepted this. I mean, this is how they will treat us. And also, if you go to some, let's see, these activists like meetings and events, always people are afraid from you. Then they discover, you are doing alarm phone. But first steps, always they are like, what are you doing here? And it's like you feel like you are not welcome, and you see, and then they ask themselves, why there is not a lot of non-European people are involved in our networks? They always, we have this, like you find a lot of white people talking together, and you feel like, why they are not? Because we don't feel for safe, because there is a lot of structural racism. And to end this story, because we can, I think I can speak so much, sorry. And I mean, also what impacted me, what recently I discovered that this structural racism in France influenced me, like how I occupy the space. For example, if I walk in this street and I know there is like a woman coming there, European woman coming there, I change the others because I know that she will think that I'm a threat. She's afraid from me, so I change the street. Also, I don't walk fast because they told us don't walk fast. Maybe you added something, and you don't put even your outfit. You don't put something urban because if you do something urban, it's mean like you can't like from this like from the city, and this is like it really. And you do after some work, you say no, I will do everything. I will put outfit urban. I will put my things. I'm Arabic. I don't care. Anyway, they will control us. Sorry, it's so much. It's so long. Oh.
Thank you, Jihad. I'm going to ask you to give our audience your message, your, let's say, request, and what would be your wish that can change in the structure, in the activist structure, and anything that can help you in your quest for having a better life and being able to live your own life without all these boxes and without all these stigmatization and labels. Would you like to start, Jihad? Yes.
I mean, I'm very bad in this request and demanding things, like I don't have any skills. But I will start by saying thank you to the people who gave us...
Just one moment. We came here in a safe space, in a very welcoming space, to give you this opportunity. So don't be afraid and ask for whatever you want. It is. That's why it's here.
Yeah.
That's why we are here.
Yeah, but I wanted to really to say thank you for people who are offering the space, because for me it's nice to... It's one of the rare events where people on the move speaks and moderate, and this is so nice. And you feel not like an object, there is an eye, and you can speak through this thing. And for the other demands, I don't know that. I mean, I have a dream that, I mean, I really love Alarm Phone, I love Luis Michel, but I dream...
The audience.
Ah, okay. I really love Alarm Phone. Really so much. It's a part of my life, and also Luis Michel and those projects were involved. But I really dream one day they will not exist. I dream one day there will be no calendar, there will be no crewing, no nothing. Like no, this is the. And what I really would like to be happy to have more non-European people on those spaces, give them opportunity to speak, give them opportunity to be present, and also it would be nice to have trust on people on the move. Like we have a lot of skills, like let them have those skills, let them show those skills, and don't, like, that's all from my side. I'm really bad in the band.
Hela, it's your turn.
What I wish for, what I ask for, yeah, that's a very big question, but in the same way of Jihad, I would really wish that at one day me or any other person who does not have a right to move freely, and to actually just move freely, and as Jihad said, that such structures do not exist anymore, not because they got criminalized, but because they are not needed anymore, or they should, they can just disappear. And also on another thing is that, just because really I'm just based in Tunis, and I have a very different way of doing activism than in Europe. I think we should once and for all forget about something, the so-called European values, and we should stop speaking as if what is Europe is doing right now, as if it was something new or something not common. Europe always did shit since the colonialism. We can speak about it until tomorrow, but I think it's really important to forget about something called European values.
So, do you think for moving freely, everyone should get a German passport?
No, let's abolish passports, that's better.
And before we open the floor for your questions, Nahid, would you like to tell your message?
I also wish a world without border, where people can freely move and doesn't have to take all this hardship to get safety. And yeah, I also wish that people can freely move. And I also wish that this, you know, I personally think that this asylum procedures are quite unfair, because after we are passing all these ways, and when we arrive, like when we arrive here, and then they're asking our case and our problems, and then sometimes some people are getting doldung and they ask them to go back to their countries. So I think this is something unfair, because if they could live in their country, why they should have to pass all this ways? Or they get Dublin, for example, because they have fingerprint that they forced to have. And I think it's really unfair that they ask them to be back in the place where they have all this kind of experiments, and they're asking them to be back there. So I wish all of them will change, and a world without border.
Thank you so much. So I would like to thank you personally for being here. You've been so great. You've been courageous to tell us your stories and your opinions. And now we're gonna open the floor to questions from the audience. Thank you one more time. A big round of applause to our guests, please. So, dear audience, if you have a question, please raise your hand. And a microphone.
One of the mics.
Oh, one of, yeah. Maybe that one. Okay.
No, I want you to see.
Hello. I feel happy to hear the various stories from our guests. Their stories made me share two or three things with the audience. The first thing is about the solidarity that European activists offered to some refugees from of the Ukraine war. Yeah, it was a good thing, but we think that there should be a kind of balance between Europe and Africa as well, because there are many refugees, many leave their areas because of many deep reasons that we don't consider, like the climate change, like the terrorism, like the poverty, like the lack of employment, like lack of education, possibilities of education. But when people move, they were not considered the same way that this recent event that happened in Europe drew attention to the people. So we want a much more balanced consideration between the people on the world. Yeah, the second thing is the situation of refugees and asylum seekers in Niger. I think that people don't know that there are two refugee camps in Niger, one in Agadez, the area where I'm living and working, and another one close to the administrative capital of Niger, which is Niamey. So these people are really facing plenty of challenges, but the authorities never consider their situations. There were many protests in our country. Some say that their cases are not taken in consideration, though they were offered the opportunity to stay in Niger as just as a transit country, and then they'll be settled somewhere. But the demands do not progress. And now, in terms of conditions living in the camps, they also reject the way they are treated. especially related to the healthcare, related to the food. Yeah, and they don't have voice. Those who intend to talk are seen as enemies of the state, and they were said to be pushed out of the camps. Yeah, so there should be a kind of much more attention towards what is happening there, because they did not just decide to come to Niger, but they were offered the opportunity to be there. So recently, from the testimonies that we have, because we work with refugees, many of them now say that the situation in the camps are horrible. The last protests had to the death of a person, of a refugee, who was shot by a real bull by soldiers, pretending that they are trying to ensure the security in the camp, but they were the ones who shot. And two other people, a man and a woman, disappeared from the camp. We don't know if they are dead. We don't know if they went, they continued their way, but it's not normal. In a camp where there are administrations who have to care about that, not be able to tell what happened. And I have my own experience to share about my movement. I am not a migrant, I am not an asylum seeker, but my trips towards Europe, I had two or three experiences that I would like to share with the audience. Yeah, the first one was in Istanbul airport, when I missed my connection. I was then in a group of people. Unfortunately, I was the one with black skin, and when they were putting stamps on the passports, when I arrived, finally they were not sure if I had a Schengen visa. They tried to check if a real visa. They put it under the sun rays to make sure that it's a Schengen visa before they decide to stamp my passport. Second, it was 2 days ago in a train. I had a lot of luggage. I entered the train. So the first place I found at the entrance, I packed my things. And then just close to that place, there were an empty chair, but the other chair was occupied by a European. As soon as I sat at that place, she suddenly moved and changed the place. Yeah, that's the two things. So yeah, we are activists. We are, world citizens, but I think we should fight for equality. And as Hela and the other guests said, we do a lot of things in our continent, but we are really scarce. Especially my local organization is applying for a complaint against our country because of the law that is criminalizing migration. So I feel a little bit scared as a head of that organization. I don't know what will be the issue, but I would like my comrades to have a hear towards Niger about the issue of that complaint. Thank you very much.
Thank you for sharing. Do you have questions to our panel guests? Do you have any comments, ideas, thoughts, dreams, wishes, words? There's one person. Yeah. Maki? Oh, now more. Okay, it's working.
Yeah, all right. Hi, everyone. So I'm not a very political person, so I don't have like that many strong opinions, but I have dreams. He said dreams. So I do agree with the dream of no borders, but I just wanted, as a thought experiment, I wanted your opinion. Which one has to go first, is borders or nationalities?
OK. Okay, yeah. When? It's like next year, tomorrow, in the next 5 years? What's the time frame like?
If you're not doing anything? If,
okay, interesting question. If we are to choose, which one to go first? Well, this is their dream. I don't know. But what do you think? Borders or nationalities first?
I mean, Corona showed us very well. I think if you see the Corona, when we had one Africa, we didn't have any vaccination, we didn't have any access to vaccine, when Europeans did have the privilege to have like vaccine and to say, no, we don't get vaccination, but no one asked why in the other part they don't have access to vaccine. And also the use of this, to, it's a long answer, sorry. So when you apply to visa, in, for example, in Tunisia, you need to have a vaccine. You have to be, you have like AstraZeneca or like, I don't know, Johnson & Johnson, but they don't exist in Tunisia. So, and we get the only vaccine that we got, it was like Chinese and Russian Sputnik. Then, to apply for a visa, you need this European vaccine, but we don't have any vaccine. So this is like, for me, it shows how much nationalism wins. During this is, but because every country was fighting, buying only for himself, France by everything, like Germany bought a lot of vaccines, and no one cares what's happening in the other. So I don't see nationality going before borders.
Okay, I hope this answers your question. Do you have any other ideas or answers to the dream?
Nationalities?
I also think nationalities.
Well, yes, when we take the idea of nationalism out of our heads, then there will be less borders.
Exactly.
It begins here, actually. So, looking at the time, I want to thank you all for being here, and let's get excited for the next talk, and see you in a bit.